Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests are Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, Richard Maurer of the Anchorage Daily News, and by Skype, Dermot Cole of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner in Fairbanks. The Alaska State Senate passes the Parnell administration cruise ship bill over the protracted objections of the Democratic minority. Richard, tell us about the bill and the vote.
Well, the bill rolls back a 2006 voter initiative. The voters voted, there was a big package of rules in this 2006 initiative, including one that said that when ships discharge wastewater, it has to meet state water quality standards at the discharge pipe, which the industry says it couldn't do. And so there was some delaying action. There was the implementation of that was delayed to 2015. And then the governor's office submitted this bill, which basically said, you no longer need to follow that clean water at the pipe rule, and you can just do what you do with other industrial pollutants, which is have a mixing zone.
Okay, and the follow-up question I'd have is, was this the legislature and the governor in effect saying that the voters had engaged in micromanagement?
Well, I think there was a little bit of that, and some people saying that the voters really were confused. I think Senator McGuire said that. I think that there was no real intent to put this bill out this year until the state Senate changed. And that's really what changed. They based it on a science panel that only issued a preliminary report. It happened so quickly. It was basically 30 plus 2 days into the session. This bill is out and done.
Dermot Cole, Fairbanks is hundreds of miles from salt water. Did this issue get much resonance up there? We know Fairbanks is dependent on tourism.
Well, Mike, to tell you the truth, it didn't. It wasn't a big issue in this area. I mean, the focus here has been so largely on energy issues and the cost of energy that's tended to overshadow just about everything else. But as you said, Fairbanks is heavily dependent indirectly on cruise ship travel, because many of the people that come here in the summer basically travel on cruise ships and then take the land tours through the state. But the question of there's a small group of people who are definitely very passionately interested in this and would raise objections to what the legislature has done. On the other hand, the local tourism industry is basically largely in favor of the governor's position on this.
Steve, the law that was overturned, as Richard said, was a result of a voter initiative. Mm-hmm. Is there a possibility we could see another voter initiative?
I suppose it's possible. I talked to organizers from that 2006 campaign the other day, and they say there are no plans to mount another petition drive at this particular point. They really don't see a groundswell of opposition that's arisen over this issue right now. Part of it may be, as Richard said, it happened so fast. There was only a couple of hours of hearings held in the House, if I'm not mistaken, and it went by pretty quickly. This was definitely on a fast track. I don't know if there's any grounds for any legal action. There's a possibility that the federal EPA may be asked to review what's happened here with these new regulations. I do know that the organizers are very disappointed, obviously, in the legislature. They just felt that this was a model piece of legislation that had received accolades from port cities around the world and felt that Alaska was doing something right. Now, in their eyes, Alaska's taken a step backwards. What'll be the next step? I'm not sure just now, but it may be some sort of a federal regulation oversight review of what's happened now.
Steve, let's stick with you. Mayor Dan Sullivan's effort to rewrite the labor laws here in Anchorage has the labor unions in a frenzy. This week, the unions came out and were pretty tough on the mayor in their response.
Yeah, they said that this was a drastic action that the mayor's taken, poorly thought out. They've used terms in this proposal to revamp labor negotiation regulations with the city. They've said that aren't even in part of the labor law lexicon. They say they have no idea what some of the terms mean. So they feel it's poorly thought out. It basically, this takes away power from the unions, bargaining power. They're not allowed to strike. These are the unions, of course, that deal directly with the city and represent union employees, city employees. Takes away their right to bring in an arbitrator, and they all appeals and all arbitration appeals now would go before the assembly, and the assembly would have the final word on these kinds of decisions. But it's severely diminishes the power of unions in bargaining and negotiations.
It's clear that the mayor and the leaders of the unions don't like each other very much, and perhaps worse than that. Yeah. I'm wondering, does that have an effect on the performance of our local government? Or is that we're on the same team, we don't have to like each other?
Yeah, I think that I don't have any evidence. I haven't heard anything that maybe folks are, you know, doing their jobs with one arm tied behind their back or anything like that. I think there's a lot of pride that workers have,
city
workers have. They're very
yeah.
professional. I don't think there's any of that going on. But as what your statement about it being, you know, there's a lot of animosity between the administration and the unions, yes. And there has been right from the start since Mayor Sullivan took over. He was very critical of the union deals that were struck with outgoing Mayor Mark Begich, who's now, of course, U.S. Senator. So he had put a lot of the blame for what he felt were exorbitant contracts at the feet of the outgoing administration. He's had a lot of dust-ups, in particular with the firefighters union.
Yeah.
From the fill the boot thing to actual provisions of their labor contract. So, he's not had a. It's not been cordial between the mayor and the.
Before
and
we
the
move
unions.
On, what can we expect in the next month?
Well, you're going to have a public hearing that's going to be held on February 27th, and then the assembly is set to vote on March 12th on this. I wouldn't be surprised to see that date pushed back, because I think you're going to have a lot of, my gut tells me there's going to be a lot of testimony. We've already seen a campaign, a media campaign spring up out of this. There have been a number of radio spots that the unions have put on local radio station airwaves. And then you've got the mayor now who's countering. I think the mayor has like a 27.
I've heard the spots, or a spot there.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny because I was waiting for the disclaimer and there is none, right?
No.
And he presents it as these are information.
That's right.
Not. Advocacy.
Right. And the mayor, you know, sometimes we've had mayors in the past who've maybe crossed that line or put a toe over it or whatever between advocacy and actually, you know, information, putting out information. But that's what the mayor says. He wants people to know what this is all about and what he stands for on this particular issue. I think he's got about $27,000 in funds to go off and mount this campaign. So this is something really. It kind of caught me off guard that he was doing this. I know he's railed against these contracts for the first 3 years of his time in office. And
from his perspective, it's smart to try and influence public opinion any way he can.
Yeah, yeah.
Richard, the Senate is in an uproar over the proposed school voucher amendment to the Constitution. You were down there. Tell our viewers some of what you saw and what's at stake here, especially after Gary Stevens, the Education Committee chairman, left town for 4 days, and what do you know, the bill was no longer, the resolution was no longer in his committee.
Right, this is another one of those fast-track bills moving along. I think there's a lot of them. And with this, the state of Alaska, like 35, 40 states, has a provision in the state constitution that says public money cannot be spent on private or religious schools. Goes back to post-Civil War era. What the advocates of private education, which is either corporate-based schools or religious schools, say, we want to take some of the money that's now going to public schools and give the parent a choice. You can take this money and take it to a private school, take it to a religious school. What the effect of that is going to be is going to be very costly for public education. Public schools by law required to educate not just A students, but students, immigrant students, students with disabilities, students with physical handicaps.
And some of those are federally mandated and have regulations.
And it's very expensive to do.
Right.
That's going to be the only. They're going to remain. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see a private school saying, "Oh, we'll take all those kids." So it's going to have a tremendous effect on draining resources to public schools. That's kind of the big issue. As well as, will you be giving public money to religious schools, and how does that affect the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution?
Now explain the inside baseball to us about Gary Stevens.
So Gary Stevens, when this Senate resolution is a constitutional amendment, so it takes the form of a resolution. 2/3 of each body has to vote in favor of it. When it was filed 2 weeks ago, it was initially given to two committees: education, which you think it affects education, and legal. Gary Stevens, the education chair, had to go out of state to a conference for something he chairs, this happened Friday a week ago. All of a sudden, the Senate President Charlie Huggins says, "We're no longer putting this in education. It's a legal issue. It's not an educational issue. It's going to go right to judiciary and then to finance." And Gary Stevens is out of town. He can't object. There is a vote on the floor. It passes with a
whatever
strong
they
majority.
Call this. This is taking a bill out of committee. Very rare.
It's a re-referral. It's a referral out of his committee. So basically, what they're saying, and what happened, there was a hearing of this very a companion measure in the House on Friday, and a lot of the questions were cut off that relate to the education component of this. The supporters of this in the legislature are saying this is not an education matter, this is a legal matter because it affects the Constitution. And what Senator Stevens, Gary Stevens, says is, no, this is an education matter. I'm going to hold an oversight hearing as my prerogative as a chairman, regardless of whether I'm going to have a hearing on this bill.
And that's been done before, both in the legislature and Congress.
Yeah, because people need to know. He says people need to know what this actually will do before it passes.
Dermot, let's get you in here. Senate Majority Leader John Coghill's explanation of why the bill was removed from Stevens' committee has been greeted with quite a bit of skepticism in Juneau, in part because the word education is in the title of the bill. Tell us more.
Well, I understand why Senator Coghill and others are taking this position. They would rather not be about an education debate at this point, but simply about the legal question of amending the Constitution to say how you can spend public money. But it most definitely is an education issue at this point, and I've sort of differed with Senator Coghill and others on that. And I think it's important for Alaskans to address this in a coherent and comprehensive fashion. One of the key things down there, and their argument is, well, it's not about education until the Constitution has changed and we start to debate how much money to send to private schools. I guess I'd say that it's about education now, because one of the policy questions, one of the large policy questions that awaits us if this goes forward, is what accountability measures would there be on public money that goes to private schools? Would the state start to regulate who the qualifications for teachers in private schools? Would the state regulate what is taught? Would the state come up with testing measures for private students? There is a large number of questions that deal with this that should be addressed. And there's an outright ban on this in the Constitution now. I think Alaska can debate whether or not it's time to end that ban. But this is not strictly a legal question. This is a question about public policy and how we fund education in the years ahead.
And Richard, we're hearing a lot from the Republican majority that the public should be should be entitled to vote on this. We should leave it up to the public. I guess that's kind of a classic argument when you're trying to round up votes.
Well, you could say that. I think Vic Fisher testified at the House Education Committee on Friday. He is a former state senator. Was one or two living members of the original Constitution writing group, and at the convention, and he basically says, the reason we made it difficult to make an amendment before it goes to the voters, we have to with two thirds. You need a two thirds supermajority, is because these are big important issues, and the legislature has a responsibility to weigh in on it prior to it going to the voter to the voters. Who may or may not be easily influenced, or may or may not have all the information. So I think that some would say that it's the legislature's responsibility to first hear the measure,
right.
hear it out. What are the ramifications? And then if the legislature agrees that it should go to the voters, do it then. But I think the idea of short-circuiting this away from education, which seems to me to be, as you say, as Dermot says, the focus of the amendment is kind of weird.
Dermot, it seems that there would be some kind of consequences within the Republican caucus about, or the majority caucus about this upheaval with Senator Stevens and his differences with Senator Coghill and so forth. What do you think?
Well, I'm not sure, Mike. They may have papered over the differences here by with Senator Stevens going ahead and having his hearings on the resolution that's not before his committee. Although, you know, as he said, technically it won't be on the resolution; it'll be on something else. But I mean, personally, I think it's sort of I think they made a mistake here by doing it this way, because it's kind of a sideshow. The question of whether or not the resolution is technically before the education committee. But there ought to be a real vibrant discussion across the state on this issue. And one other thing I might add is, we also don't know what would this mean to the future of rural education. You're not going to have a lot of private schools opening in small villages. So that's going to put pressure on the education budget. What are the implications there? And as Rich mentioned before, what about the special education students and how this plays out. This is a big topic. It's not just a simple matter of school choice. It's very complicated.
One thing, Richard, I wanted to go back to you, is that it would seem that the Republican majority doesn't think they have Gary Stevens' vote. They wouldn't have done any of this if they thought they had his vote.
Well, it's hard to say, because Gary Stevens did. He came back from this convention. It seemed like he was on the outs with his majority, and he votes on the cruise bill. He has fishing communities. Fishermen were opposed, going back
right.
to the Cruise Bill. Fishermen were very opposed to the, and he has Cordova too in his district, and he votes with the majority on the cruise ship bill to pass it. So I don't know. I don't know that anyone ever gets permanently mad with anybody in politics.
And you had something else you wanted
to add?
That's what you wanted to add. Yeah. Steve, turning back to Anchorage, a 25-year-old driver dies in a police shooting after he rams his stolen vehicle into one or more police cars. What happened, and is this going to raise more questions about people who have run-ins with the police, literally? I mean, we had several incidents mm-hmm. where people have died.
Yeah. Well, what happened was a couple of mornings ago, Carl Bowie III, 25-year-old here in Anchorage, was allegedly spotted looking into windows of some parked cars. I believe it was out at the Diamond Mall area. Somebody confronted him. He jumped in his car, took off. There was a police chase. Police put out spike strips to try and flatten his tires and stop him. He got through that. Police say he tried to ram a couple of cruisers, did ram one, and at some particular point in time, two officers pulled their guns, and Bowie was, they fired seven shots. This is according to Police Chief Mark Mew. Three of them struck Bowie, and he eventually died from his wounds. Now, there's a lot of questions that we don't know the answers to right now. Did the officers feel threatened? This fellow allegedly tried to ram him. Did the officers warn him that they were going to fire? Things like that. There's a lot of big questions out there.
If I might, Steve, I think there's also a question of what did they know about him? If they were able to know who was in the car and that what kind of record he had, I think he had a violent felony.
He did, and he was on parole at the time of this, and I don't know if they knew that. Information is pretty quick between dispatch and the cars, the officers in the cars, so he had walked away, and it was in violation of his parole. There's a lot of things we don't know about. It obviously a very tense situation, a situation that was changing quite rapidly, and the officers fired. Again, there's a lot of questions that are going to have to be answered. Special Prosecution's Office, the Office of Special Prosecutions and Appeals is looking into this. We should know a lot more next week as to
they
move pretty quickly. We talked to Mark Mew the other night, Chief Mew, on the air, and he kind of thought it maybe would take about a week or so to wrap that aspect up. They'll talk to the officers, obviously. Now, the family of Mr. Bowie basically is very upset over this for obvious reasons, but one of the things they said was he was trying to give himself up. They say that he had his hands up and he was surrendering to the police when they shot at him. That's what they're saying. So we saw this with a fellow by the name of Tosi a few
in
months
Mountain
back.
View.
Yeah,
you know,
Mountain View. Yeah, he was seen on security video carrying a large stick and coming at an officer, and an officer fired shots that fatally wounded Mr. Tosi. And that created an awful lot of tension in the Mountain View area as well. This was not this particular incident, by the way.
Okay, well, let's see what we know in 10 days.
Yeah.
Dermot, let's talk about a bill you've been following. Many members of the legislature want to change eligibility for permanent fund dividends to enable some Alaskans who've been living outside of Alaska to obtain the dividend. They can't now. But the legislature seems to be hung up on this because they're struggling with the specifics.
Well, Mike, ever since the dividend was established more than 30 years ago, you know, residency has been, you know, a key element at the heart of it. Going back to when Jay Hammond had a plan that you would get a larger dividend for every month you'd lived in the state. I don't know if you remember that, but he had it
I
down
think it was
to
actually a year.
Well, but he had it down to 1/12, though. So.
Oh, he did. Okay.
But, you know, again, the U.S. Supreme Court declared that unconstitutional. You know, in those days, if you had lived, Hammond's plan was if you lived in Alaska since statehood, you'd get the most amount of money. If you'd lived here, you know, for a month, you'd get very little. But the Zobel case really threw all that out. Basically, you have to be here for a full calendar year and then apply. But there are, ever since the dividend was created, there have been exemptions that have been placed in the law to allow people to be outside for extended periods and still collect dividends. Going to college is the most obvious one of that. And I notice my cat is basically walking in front of the camera here, so I'll move up. The cat distracted me too. The
college kids get the dividend even though they're gone. Military, members of the congressional staff.
Right, and also if you're on the Olympic team. I mean, there's a bunch of exemptions that have been.
I didn't know about the Olympic team.
Yeah, so when you try out for the Olympics, you'll be able to go outside for that. Anyway, so how you deal with people who are outside for extended periods of time and yet still get the dividend. This is a dicey situation. The current bill came about as a way of sort of trying to get dividends to people in the military who are gone for many years. But the problem of doing that is that you can't just restrict something to the military. So the legislature has been, I think they gave sort of a perfunctory review of this bill because it would have allowed, for instance, people to have their dependents who have never lived in Alaska to get dividends for an indefinite period, up to 18 years, without ever having lived in the state. Defining it down so that it really solves everybody's needs is difficult. Paul Seaton of Homer really brought out the sort of some weak points in this legislation, and that has sort of held it up. I guess I'd say I think you ought to get rid of most of these 16 exemptions that currently exist, including the one that says if you're a member of Congress, you can be gone from Alaska for more than
40 years, for example. Okay, we need to move on here. Richard, both houses of the legislature are passing pro-gun measures, pro-firearms measures that are essentially nullification laws. This has been tried for a long period of American history in different parts of the country. What is our legislature up to here?
I believe this country once fought a war over that.
Yeah, that's right.
But happened too long ago. There are basically three bills in the House that deal with specific laws, and then there are resolutions in both chambers. I think the laws and the resolutions basically express, we're outraged by what's going on in Washington. It's terrible. The laws actually do something. The bills actually do something. And two of the three are moving quickly to the floor. One of them is the Stand Your Ground bill. That's Mark Newman, Representative Mark Newman, has been trying to get that through for years.
And that's substantial legislation.
That's the one where you're walking down the street, you see something going on, you're allowed to shoot first and ask questions later if you feel you have a legitimate feeling that your life or someone else's life is in danger. That's controversial.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to do this to you. We're in danger of running out of time. Thank you very much for joining us on Alaska Edition. We'll see you right here next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.